This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. I am here today with your humble host from Off the Shelf, Larry Allen, who is now, I am proud to say, happy to say, president of Allen Federal Business. And you can find Larry at Allen Federal, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Larry, welcome to the show.
Mark, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It's the osmosis thing for me. The closer I am to smart people, maybe some of it will rub off. All right, let's start with, you just left Coalition. What's Allen Federal going to do?
Well, after 20 plus years at the Coalition for Government Procurement, which was a great opportunity, Mark, and spent the last several of those as president of the association, I thought it was time to go out on my own. Nothing wrong with the Coalition. It's great, and I think it's going to go great under Roger Waldron, its new president. But Allen Federal Business Partners is set up to work with a select group of companies on their specific corporate government procurement and contracting issues. Most obviously, Mark, I think somebody with my background, that would be a public policy issue, regulatory, legislative issue, things that people need not just some insight into how that could affect their business, but also if they want to have a means to shape that policy, that regulation, that legislation. That would be why they might seek my help out. Also plan on doing a lot of training on various aspects of contract compliance, what's going on in government contracting generally, making sure that people are up to date on the latest changes. And it's also come to my attention that each company has a little specific problem they might need a little help with. So I imagine I'll be doing some of that too.
There's a lot of that going around, and hopefully you can help some of the those companies that have preconceived notions on the market develop a better and broader strategic plan for penetration.
And that's kind of the type of thing that I think I can help with. I'm not going to be a treetop level type of guy. That's not really my area of expertise. And there are certainly very good people out there in the market, Mark, among the best of them. So
thank you.
At doing that type of thing. But certainly, if somebody needs an environmental scan, a view of government procurement from the 20,000-foot level, that's the type of thing that I think I can provide. And if they need more granularity, then I know where to send them.
You've got a decent Rolodex after 20 years of this, but you know, you weaned on the Hill, so you were involved in the policy on that side as well. What do you think's going to, you know, because of that personal experience and because of you still have ties to the Hill post election? I don't care about the political side, but the impact here is going to be potentially huge. What's your take?
Well, I think you're right. We have this morning three of the top four Democrats on the House Armed Services Committee, including the chairman, out of a job. And it's not at all clear who might become the ranking Democrat on that important committee. And, Mark, that's an important committee for anybody in government contracting because that's the committee from which a lot of procurement reform legislation actually gets passed. It may be originated in another committee, but things tend to find their way to the defense authorization bill. So you're going to have some new players. You're probably going to have some new professional staff, and they tend to write a lot of the procurement related stuff that we all care about. So that'll be an interesting take. But outside of that committee, you also have Darrell Issa, the Republican congressman from California, coming in as the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. He said that he may change that name back. But nevertheless, oversight will be at the forefront of what that committee does. Congressman Issa, currently the ranking Republican on that committee, has no procurement people on that committee for him. In fact, he has a team of investigators. And the New York Times recently called him the antagonist in chief of the Obama administration. So that's a role that he plays proudly, and being the chairman of the committee will give him a larger stage from which he can proactively pursue an oversight agenda, looking at the things that the administration's doing. So he will be joining Senator Claire McCaskill, although Senator McCaskill, a Democrat, she has for the last several years pursued her own robust oversight agenda on the Senate side from the Senate Subcommittee on Contracting. So you'll have both the House and the Senate providing a lot of oversight. You'll have some new players. One of the things that I always get concerned about, Mark, is when you have 60 new players coming in, they may think they know something about government contracting.
Well, they all have some notions.
Right, but there's a lot of education that's going to have to be done in order for some level of common sense to prevail.
Yeah, but yeah, you and I have watched this for a long time. Sometimes common sense simply does not occur.
It does not, and sometimes, whether we're talking government procurement policy or anything else, legislation and policy is made on emotion, made on perception, and that doesn't always, in fact, frequently does not lead to the best rules and regulations that govern our business. So I would hope that this incoming Congress would take some time to maybe dig a little deeper, know what they don't know, and ask questions before they proceed.
It would be nice. I wouldn't count on it,
no.
But it would certainly be nice. But, you know, they'll probably all end up reading O'Hara and thinking all contractors are evil anyway. Did I say that out loud?
At least the contractors that are from Alaska, if they read that.
Well, there's that. And you know, we can touch on that, but we won't right now because I want to talk about strategic sourcing. GSA is closed Schedule 75. They awarded a BPA. And from my perspective, their reasoning is flawed and convoluted. But I'd like, not that I'm trying
right.
to taint this discussion, but I'd like your take on strategic sourcing.
Well,
let's start with an explanation of exactly what it is for people who don't know.
Sure. Strategic sourcing is the government's attempt to combine its acquisition needs and to award a select group of companies contracts to fulfill those needs. So in the case of office supplies, which is really the first major strategic sourcing initiative out of the box, you have a number of government agencies that have committed, at least on paper, to using this contract vehicle that GSA has put in place. GSA ironically used the schedules program as the underpinnings for negotiating the blanket purchase agreements, BPAs, that you talked about with the companies that now have been selected to supply those services. The idea behind it, Mark, is that if you winnow down the number of players and can provide some level of assurance that these contracts are going to be used, that the contractors will in turn offer commensurate discounts based on the anticipation of a certain level of business. I think there are some fundamental issues with this specific strategic sourcing contract, however, one of which is if your original idea is to limit the number of companies and drive competition through a down select, why do you have, as this strategic sourcing program has, the ability to add new companies when the government decides it's in the best interest of the government to do that? If I'm one of the original awardees, and I've talked to a couple of the original awardees about this, they kind of feel, well, then why did we go to bat and do all the things we did? Because people in their own companies had to run proposals up the ladder, get approval to give competitive pricing, and now anybody can jump in later on down the game without having to head sweat it so much. I also think that any time that you close a schedule contract, you are running the risk of trying to assume that you are in a better position of knowing what you want, what your customers want, than your customers are. And I think that's a danger for any centralized procurement. And one of my beliefs is that if agencies find that this strategic sourcing initiative is not meeting their needs and it doesn't have the products and there's no capability to get those products on the underlying schedule because it's closed, then they're going to find other ways to get those needs met. It's not that their needs are going to go unmet. They'll just find a way around it.
Right. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry has just started Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find Larry at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. United Healthcare Vision is the clear choice. In fact, 9 out of 10 United Healthcare Vision Fed VIP members would recommend their plan to family and friends. The Fed VIP open season period for federal employees and retirees runs through December 13th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision at myuhcvision.com/fedvip. That's myuhcvision.com/fedvip. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare. This open season.
Diaper bag, check. Bouncy seat, check. Stroller, car seat, bottles, butt wipes, and binky, check, check, and double check. Why it takes 30 pounds of equipment to transport one 12-pound baby, we'll never know. So at Kaiser Permanente, we put everything for baby and you in one place. Everything you need, from obstetricians and nurses to nutritionists and pediatricians. A whole care team of specialists assembled to keep your baby and you in top running order, not running around. And you can even go online with My Health Manager to schedule routine appointments, check most lab results, and exchange emails with your Kaiser Permanente doctor's office. Imagine having a conversation with your pediatrician without having to fold or unfold that stroller. Convenient, check. Efficient, check. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Pentagon and Beyond. Brought to you by Airink.
The new fighter jet. What will it look like? Experts say it's going to have to deal with enemies equipped for electronic attack and with sophisticated air defenses. It's going to have passive detection, integrated self-protection, directed energy weapons, and cyber attack capabilities. The Air Force Materiel Command said in a notice to the defense industry, the new aircraft is going to have to operate in the, quote, anti-access area denial environment that will exist beginning in about 2030. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the size of an aircraft hangar that can hold four C-130 military aircraft simultaneously? Airink can. Airink operates the largest commercial hangar in Oklahoma City. As an FAA Part 145 repair station, Airink's team delivers advanced special mission capabilities, reverse engineering of obsolete parts, along with aircraft modifications, avionics upgrades, systems integration, and more. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And again, you can find them at allenfederal.com. Larry, we have a, it's kind of a tiered effect on the Schedule 75 BPA, the strategic sourcing, where at level one, new discount, once level one is completed, new discounts will kick in. My perception is that several of the 15 awardees will not be able to sustain the discounts predicated simply on their size at level two. Explain to me.
Well, I think that that's a very good point, Mark, and it's an accurate one. You know, the good news, one of the things that the government's touting about this strategic sourcing award is that predominant awardees are small businesses, but I think that your point's an excellent one. once we get to a certain tier discount, those small businesses simply aren't going to be able to offer those types of discounts across the board and stay compliant. For one thing, in the world of office supplies, most of these guys get their products from one of two very large supply houses. And so the standard discounts are all pretty well set, and the term agreements are understood, and there's a certain level below which companies can't go, otherwise they will start to lose money on each transaction, and that's not good business. You can't make it up on volume.
No, and the other thing was I've heard several people from GSA explain that one of the reasons they chose Schedule 75 was they had almost 500 vendors, 100 of which who were non-productive, so they decided to do a BPA here and award it to 15. Well, that, you know, my math may be a little off, but that still leaves 365 or so other vendors who were working this schedule, producing, and this kind of just leaves them literally out in the cold. And a lot of those are small businesses.
In fact, the great majority of those non-BPA awardees are small businesses, some of them that have quite significant federal business in their own right, or did have it up until this point.
Right.
They may have bid on the BPA, but for whatever reason, they weren't one of the initial awardees. But one of the things that struck me about the initial list of awardees was just the names that I expected to be there from the small business community that weren't. And these are companies that have good relationships and offer competitive solutions to their customers. And I think their customers enjoy doing business with them. It will be interesting to see at the line level whether those customers can have their arms twisted or be otherwise persuaded to use the SSI, or whether they will continue to do business with those scheduled contractors that they know and have an existing business relationship with.
Right. And the key word there, I believe, is relationship. And we both know this is a relationship-driven market. But on the commodity side, perhaps a little less so than, a lot less so than on the services side. There has to be a comfort level between the agency and any vendor. So,
well, you're right. Relationships are key here, particularly in the current marketplace that we're doing business in. I always tell people that government agencies today like to do business with people they know. They like to make the risk-averse decision. If it's something that they have been doing and there's good past performance, then there's a propensity to try and keep doing it, because not everybody's going to wonder, hey, why are we suddenly doing this? Because it's been done and it's working. So I think relationships are even probably more key in the government market than they may be commercially.
Okay. All right. But strategic sourcing isn't going to stop with 75.
No, it's not. In fact, next up in the queue right now is multifunction devices, what you and I, Mark, call copiers. And GSA and OMB are working diligently on a solution for that type of strategic sourcing. I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not GSA comes out with a solution like the one in office supplies, where they attempt to do a down select, offer print management services, which is what they're talking about doing. You know, I'm one who does not believe that there is a one-size-fits-all strategic sourcing solution, i.e., even though somebody could make a reasonable claim right now that the office supplies approach with the down select in 15 companies is paying dividends, I'm not sure that a down select BPA for multifunction devices and print management services will work, simply because not every agency is at the same place that they need to be in order for that type of analysis, that type of service, to really mean anything. One of the things that we advocated for when I was at the coalition was to open up a new special item number on the appropriate GSA schedule for print management services, and then let each agency at the agency level buy those services so they could make their own analyses. If GSA, I think, attempts to put together a BPA for those types of services, there's not going to really be an effective outcome there, because there are very few companies who offer these things. Secondly, they're extremely mature in this market. And third, they know very well that their customers are all over the map when it comes to being ready to adapt to this type of strategic sourcing initiative. So we've been counseling at the coalition that another approach be taken, and not sure that OMB will sign off on that.
Okay, and I know you guys had a letter out to them on that.
Yes.
From the coalition. I haven't read it. I probably should. Is that available?
I think we'll probably find some way to make that available to you, yeah.
That'd be cool. But copiers, do copiers and multifunction devices fall under 70?
Group 36.
36.
Although your point, mostly, Mark, they do fall under 36, but your point's a good one. Some of them do fall under Schedule 70. The great majority of the discussion that GSA has been having on this issue have been with the Group 36 contractors. Group 70 contractors, if this is you selling multifunction devices and you haven't heard about strategic sourcing, I would offer that you are considerably behind the curve here.
I would offer that you should get in touch with Larry at allenfederal.com really soon. But, you know, we know the copiers are next. I actually heard the commissioner of FAS talk about that at the coalition event. What do you anticipate other things queuing up here?
Absolutely. I think next up will be software. You know, we've seen the Smart Buy program in government acquisition for a number of years, and it started out okay, but with a fairly limited number of agreements. The commissioner and others in GSA have said that they want to reinvigorate and substantially expand the Smart Buy program, which is very much a strategic sourcing model. You negotiate one master agreement with the government for whatever software you're providing, and then allegedly every government agency can buy via that contract. It's a big government out there, and many of the software companies are big too. So, again, how you drive buy-in through a centralized program, I'm not sure, in a diverse market. But all that means, Mark, is that strategic sourcing really is a top priority of this Office of Management and Budget. This is something that is ultimately being driven by Jeffrey Zients at OMB. This is a key part of President Obama's government management agenda. And that's why I think we're seeing a significant amount of work on GSA's part to try and implement these solutions, and B, solutions that may make good banner headlines, but may or may not, as you get into the diverse offerings being affected, deliver great procurement outcomes.
My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find him at allenfederal.com. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com, or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What are the benefits of regulatory partnerships? How can new approaches to public-private partnerships enhance food safety? Join host Michael Keegan as he profiles three IBM Center reports and explores these questions and more with authors Russ Mills, Cassandra Mosley, Professors Noel Grice, and Monica Nogueira. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Eagles fans, you're invited to a special live taping of the Jeff Jones Coaches Show Saturday morning, November 13 at 10:45 a.m. at Potomac Pizza, just off Wisconsin Avenue in Friendship Heights. Join us for brunch with the coach and enjoy some great pizza and sandwiches with our friends at Potomac Pizza. We'll recap the opening night game versus St. Francis and look ahead to the rest of the season with special guest callers. Get lunch and get knowledge during the Jeff Jones Coaches Show Saturday, November 13th at 10:45 a.m. at Potomac Pizza in Friendship Heights. Visit AUEagles.com for complete show information.
Here's Mike Butler, Deputy Director for Identity Management, DOD, on the Federal Executive Forum on Identity Management, sponsored by SafeNet.
Why couldn't it be a digital certificate that's not even issued by the government? It's just our government has to come up with the appreciation that I need to trust what I did not personally issue. And when we get that, then all of a sudden it changes. It's a game changer.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. You may think you're on Off the Shelf because my guest is Larry Allen, the host of Off the Shelf and the president of AllenFederalBusinessPartners.com. I don't know how much longer you're going to do Off the Shelf. I hope you're going on the radio because I love listening to you.
I appreciate that, and we're talking with the folks here. I think that loyal listeners of Off the Shelf will continue to hear my dulcet tones in some capacity.
You are one of the premier people when it comes to all things GSA. That's not an immodest thing for me to say on your behalf. It's simply a fact. You've been studying this stuff for 20 years at the Coalition, and before that, your committee work on the Hill was in this area, which is why they brought you on board. Brilliant move on their part. But GSA schedule overall, you know, the argument, or one of the arguments for SSI was, you know, X number of companies on 75 weren't making money. Well, if you look at the 10,000-plus contracts on GSA, 15% of the companies don't make any money anyway. And GSA apparently for a long time didn't really pay attention to that. But then, you know, the most important thing I think is that the top 2% of the vendors take over 65%, 2/3 of the scheduled dollars. And this is not because it's wired or anything else. It's because they know how to work the schedules. Let's have a primer here, if you will, on all things GSA schedule, including what we were talking about in between some of the new folks at GSA.
Well, certainly, Mark. I think the biggest mistake that new companies on schedule make is that they believe still, after all this time, that once they get a schedule contract, business is going to come to them over the transom, when in reality, this is very much a hunting license. And like any hunting license, it's only as good as you are a hunter to go and get the business that you need to make your company sustainable. And then we see companies that take a look at the entire smorgasbord of government contracting opportunities and try to say yes to all of them. That's a second mistake that people make. So, as you pointed out, the larger, more successful companies, and the more successful companies aren't always the larger ones.
I mean, right.
Some of the times you have very robust small businesses doing good, consistent business on this program.
And you have some companies that only do government work and you don't hear about absolutely anywhere else.
That's true too. And the deal with those companies is they figured out that relationships are key. They started with what they knew. They started with the opportunities that were closest to them, established their beachhead, established their bona fides, past performance today, absolutely the platinum standard in government contracting if you're attempting to expand your business out. And the successful companies understand that. They build the relationships. They take the time. They pursue the orders. They know they have to do capture, and that's what they do, and they make the investments in that. If you are a company of any size and you can't put both feet facing forward in this market, then I don't recommend that you get on schedule or do other things in government procurement, because if you're not facing forward, then you're likely to get hit either by an auditor or a competitor or something that is equally unsavory for you. GSA, as you pointed out, Mark, does have a couple of new people in more or less permanent positions. Steve Kemp, the permanent commissioner of the Federal Acquisition Service, and I'm a fan of Steve's. I think he is going to do a good job. He certainly rose very quickly through the ranks at GSA to become the commissioner, and I think he's got a good vision for generally where he wants to take all FAST programs, including the schedules. You have Houston Taylor, who's the Assistant Commissioner for Acquisition Management, who's brand new, and he's got a lot on his plate, and I would hope that Steve gives him the authority to do the things he needs to do to bring some continuity into the schedules program. Right now, for example, you have Schedule 70 negotiated in three places, negotiated in Arlington, Virginia, negotiated in Kansas City, and now in Fort Worth, Texas. So there's a lot of diversity there about how those contracts get in place. So you need some consistency. I know that Steve spoke recently about bringing in some people, one senior person to oversee the IT portfolio, a senior person to oversee everything on schedule that's not IT. I'd like to recommend that Steve and GSA senior management look at one person who can maybe work with those two folks to tie it all together. When you throw in the VA sales, Mark, schedules program is approaching $50 billion a year. That's a lot. And it really suggests to me that you do need one belly button to push, one person who is responsible for managing the program. And I'm working, I'd like to see GSA work to move in that direction.
Okay. $50 billion.
Close to it.
Who knew? I don't follow the VA schedules that much, so I didn't know they were almost $15 billion. So that's pretty impressive. I shouldn't be surprised, and that's probably going to grow.
Well, the government buys a lot of drugs, Mark.
Yes, they do.
In case you couldn't tell.
It's funny because early on in the SmartPay, when it was Impact, they used to say what the top purchases were on the card program, and number one forever was drugs.
Right.
And it probably still is, but they don't publish those figures anymore.
Pharmaceutical sales by far the lead in the VA schedules program, and overall the program is about at $48 billion. So you look at the GSA parts, about $38 billion. So the next 10 or so come from VA, and that's a growing number as well. And talking to the folks at the VA, they want to grow the medical surgical supply part of their business and have every expectation of doing so.
Okay. Now, are they going to follow the schedule model on that?
Well, I think for now they certainly will. Right now, the VA operates those schedules under a delegation of procurement authority from GSA, which means that they have to follow generally the same rules and regulations that GSA does. There are some specific statutory differences for the pharmaceutical program, but I know that VA and GSA people do talk regularly, frankly, after years of the urging from our at the coalition where I just left. But at least they're talking now. VA, I think, every now and then talks about doing its own schedules program, getting specific statutory authority to have that happen. I'm not sure that that's really in the offing, but yeah, for now it's all part of the same federal supply schedules program.
Would that be an OMB issue if they wanted to migrate in that direction?
OMB, and it would require statutory authority from Congress to allow them to set up procurement authority to permanently buy the federal supply codes that they currently buy.
Okay. Curiouser and curiouser, which would lead me into our next discussion area, which is when we were discussing what to talk about on the show, you mentioned a phrase that I don't hear often enough, and that's the environmental scanning of this market. Let's just talk very briefly about what are the influencers here that impact the market in ways that aren't readily noticeable but have a serious impact on the vendor community?
Well, an excellent question, and I think those influencers do change over time. The influencers that are shaping today's market are very different from the ones that shaped the market just a half a dozen years ago, and I think the cycle time will probably get a little bit shorter. But today's influencers, contractors, if you're selling to the government and haven't figured out that you're not your customer's best friend, let me be the one to break the news to you. Contractors are looked upon with suspicion in today's government market, which means there are people who are doing a lot of oversight, that a lot of people looking over your contracting officer's shoulder. And believe me, your contracting officer is very aware of that. So who's doing that looking? Well, their own inspector general, or in the case of Department of Defense, the Defense Contract Audit Agency, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, does a lot of overlooking. The Congressional Oversight Committees do a lot of overlooking. So,
and you mentioned earlier that the several of those are going to have very different flavors.
Right. And all of that, if you've got three or four people looking over your shoulder, you might be a little skittish about the procurement decisions you make. And that's exactly what we find ourselves in. So this is a very risk-averse government market right now. If you have an established reputation, that's good. If you can show why you're low cost, I wouldn't say that best value has gone out the window, but certainly it's not as large of a factor as it used to be. There's certainly ascendancy for the low cost part of this market. And if you've got a best value proposition, you have to make it crystal clear and easy for everybody to understand. The other part of this is, if you're doing business in GSA particularly, you need to understand why the administrator's drive towards sustainability will impact types of services and products you sell off schedule, on schedule, and how you sell them.
Okay, great. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find them at AllenFederal.com. I'm surprised that was available. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You should never be constrained by your network. That's why government agencies turn to Avaya Government Solutions and CenturyLink. Their data networking portfolio offers reliable, secure, end-to-end solutions needed to fully recognize the power of real-time communications. Solutions from Avaya and CenturyLink deliver innovative technology, energy-efficient hardware, and improve the effectiveness of business by creating a simpler, more effective network. The future of data networking has arrived. Learn more at avayagov.com/GSA2010.
For over 40 years, ManTech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for ManTech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, ManTech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. ManTech is an equal opportunity employer.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. All right. Big issues for 2011 and probably beyond. Small business issues in particular.
Well, certainly, Mark. We saw small business issues right about now, right at the end of October, right at the beginning of October, rather, become at the forefront with what happened with the GTSI case and agencies coming to contractors and asking them to do business with small businesses so they can get small business credit, or the small businesses may or may not have contributed greatly to the actual fulfillment of that specific procurement. So I think there will be a lot more investigation in that specific area. What is it that small businesses are bringing to the table in small business procurements? And point of fact, I think you'll find both sides of that argument. I think you're going to find things that small businesses do 100% or very nearly of, but I think you're also going to find some more cases where small businesses acted as the conduit through which a larger business provided a lot of work, and there are going to be a lot of reasons for that. Government's hands aren't clean in this either, so that's the important thing to remember as we go through this. But I think that you'll have SBA doing that oversight and investigation. I think you will definitely have the new Congress.
Well, that's sort of like Claude Rains having control over Ricks and Casablanca.
Right.
I'm shocked to find gambling.
Very good metaphor. And yeah, I think, but you know, small business issues generally in government procurement and contracting aren't always arrived at by good sound business logic. Small businesses are very, and their participation in the government market, very emotional issue, very flashpoint type issue for many members of Congress, and with good reason. So how that plays out ultimately, Mark, remains to be seen, because while you can look at it some way from a business sense, we all know that the government market, whether you're talking small business or anything else, does not always operate strictly on a business case basis.
Well, that, and you know, there is the perpetual myth of the level playing field, and it just is not so. The field is not level. The smarter you are, the less level it gets. The more voluntarily ignorant you will remain, the
and that's more not even particular to business size.
Yeah. It's got nothing. All right. So let's you kind of broached on this. What about the ANC issue?
Well, Senator McCaskill mentioned in late, actually very early November, her intention to introduce legislation as soon as the 15th or 16th of this month, Mark, that would put ANCs on a more even playing field with other 8A contractors. Today, Alaska Native corporations enjoy kind of a super 8A preference, whereas the government can turn to an ANC company and give them a contract for any size of business without competition. And Senator McCaskill's own investigations in her subcommittee, as well as some of the more publicized Washington Post articles, have showed that that program may not always benefit Alaska's natives themselves in terms of the money getting back to those native people. And I think Senator McCaskill would like to clamp down on that. I don't think she's going to be alone in that. While I don't know that her legislation will pass as it is introduced, I do think that this whole area of Alaska Native Corporation, as well as other types of socioeconomic preferences, will continue to get congressional attention. And in fact, it's worth noting that since the beginning of the year, the SBA has been working on a rule that would require ANCs to actually do a specific percentage of a contract in order for it to qualify as a set-aside.
Oh, well, that would be good. But, I mean, you and I have been watching this for a long time, and there has been abuse on all levels of the set-aside program. This is not to taint all of the set-aside program
right.
members by any stretch, but there's always been abuse in each of the programs.
Well, there is abuse because there's a lot of money at stake here and a lot of desire to get business done, get it done quickly. And if you are a government buyer in an agency and you know that Congress has asked you to do a certain amount of your business with a certain socioeconomic category and that you know that when those reports come out showing that you fall short of those goals, your agency is excoriated, that's a powerful driver to try and meet those goals, even in the compressed timetables and time of substantial work that each contracting professional finds themselves under today.
Cool. All right. Discretionary spending.
Discretionary spending is something that if you're in this government market, you need to understand that even before the November midterm elections was going to be tight. Why do you care about discretionary spending? You care because that's the money that the government uses to buy whatever it is you're selling.
Give the figure.
Well, there's somewhere over $400-500 billion a year in play here in discretionary spending, which is a big number, but that number has not been growing substantially. In fact, I think before the elections, Mark, we were looking at kind of a static government market overall. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see the newly elected Republican majority in the House take a look at cutting some discretionary spending even further, say in 2012 and beyond, that could even tighten this market up more.
Gotta play hard, boys and girls.
You gotta play hard, and you've got to make sure, you know, my members in the coalition that I led up until last week, those that grew their business grew it by taking business away from other companies or by merger and acquisition. So it's not like they uncovered a lot of new business out there under rocks that other people weren't looking under.
Okay. Final topic, DOD.
DOD, everybody's at least important for many, the largest government customer they have. A couple of issues I want to talk on there, Mark. One is that we've seen Shay Assad, the Director of Defense Procurement, and his boss, Ashton Carter, the Undersecretary for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, both state publicly that it's their intent to drive increased competition in DOD contracting. What's interesting about this, because it's not the first time we've heard it, is that even in cases where DOD only gets one offer, only one response back to an RFP or RFQ, DOD management is directing contracting officers to enter into negotiations and discussions with that sole respondent in an attempt to lower the price and make sure that the price that they're getting is fair and reasonable. So it used to be that if you were the sole respondent, particularly to a full and open competition RFP, that price was automatically deemed to be fair and reasonable, but not so now. I think that that actually might happen. However, the other thing that Shay Assad and Dr. Carter are promoting with the use of firm fixed price and cost plus contracts and the strong discouragement of using time and material labor hour contracts, I think will have a more problematic outcome. We still don't have a large acquisition workforce in DOD. We have an acquisition workforce,
civilian.
Right, that has a lot to do in a short period of time to do it. You also have some people who may not have had the training necessary to state the government's needs in such a way that they can put a firm fixed price solicitation out on the street. One of the examples that I would use in this area is that I am frequently getting questions from other people about the continued use of brand name or equal in government contracts. If you have contracting officers that primarily feel comfortable in describing their product needs in terms of brand name or equal, how can you expect that same acquisition professional to turn around and be able to write a performance-based statement of work for a service contract in a firm fixed price environment? I just don't think you can get there, Mark. Which is why I think we're going to have time and material and labor hour contracts around for services for the foreseeable future. I don't think that's a bad thing either. There is, in my view anyway, no such thing as an inherently bad contracting method among the ones that the government uses today. What needs to happen is acquisition management. What happens after that contract's awarded? We focus a lot on getting that contract awarded and how it's awarded, and that's important, but that's only part of the story. It's what comes after contract award, making sure that the government's best interests continue to be managed regardless of contract type, And I think that's where I would recommend DOD spend some of their resources.
There you go. And I would be remiss if I didn't congratulate you on being recently selected or elected to the Procurement Roundtable.
Thank you. That's a great honor to be among the group of the Procurement Roundtable, a group of extremely learned people who have done a lot of work in government acquisition. As I've been told, for the next little while, I'm going to be sitting at the kids' table portion of that group.
Yeah, we Thanksgiving at my grandparents' the table in the kitchen. Larry Allen, thank you so much for joining me today. Larry is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners. You can find them at allenfederal.com. This is not my day job. If you sell products to the government, today is the last day to register for the 7th Annual Summit on Selling Products to the Government. And my latest speaker announced right now is Larry Allen. The event is tomorrow near BWI at the Maritime Center. For details, go to federaldirect.net and click on the yellow star. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off center. With AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and Dell. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why their vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. United Healthcare Vision is the clear choice. In fact, 9 out of 10 United Healthcare Vision Fed VIP members would recommend their plan to family and friends. The Fed VIP open season period for federal employees and retirees runs through December 13th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about their benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision at myuhcvision.com/fedvip. That's myuhcvision.com/fedvip. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare. This open season.
Do you know if your doctor's office has a gerontoneurological podiatrist on staff? Probably not. So what kind of look would you get from the receptionist if you asked to see a dermatological pulmonohematologist? And how long do you think you'd have to wait to see a cardioendocrinological ophthalmologist? We think probably forever. And a day. At Kaiser Permanente, our primary care doctors, specialists, nurses, and technicians all link together. And shared digital information really lets them think and work as one. That's because we understand your hip bone is not just connected to your knee bone. It's connected to the rest of you. So everyone you see needs to be connected to everyone else who cares for your health from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. And why nobody's better qualified to help next time you feel a touch of sciatica bursa tendonitis. That's what makes us Kaiser Permanente, and that's how we help you live well, be well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20850.